Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You scared of things that go boom, boom, boom?
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
My name is Eric, and joining me today is hooded teenager Michael Kester. Simple and easy.
Just a hooded, classic hooded teen.
Joining me today to swim in the lake is Michael Kester.
Mm-hmm.
Joining me today in a wicker basket is Michael Kester.
How'd I get burned?
All day long. My name is Eric 13. How'd I get burned? Michael Kester. That's the correct one. We've hit it. Is that even in this version of The Wicker Man?
No, fuck no.
It's not.
We need to, hi, welcome to Double Feature, a show where we just immediately have conversations without introducing the show. If you've never listened to Double Feature before, it's hard to say because I'm about 45 minutes away from knowing whether or not this is worth being your first listen.
No,
but
Blade
if you
Runner
don't
and Fargo,
want,
man, come on.
I was about to get
easy.
There. If you don't want to start here, which, I mean, you're already here, but sure, Eric wants you to go back to Blade Runner and Fargo, which is about 5 weeks ago.
We start a brand new chapter. I don't like saying mm-hmm. season for some, that's what it is. It's a season. Yeah. Look, I'm going to try it out. We start
it's
a
not,
brand new season.
It's not, because it's a full year. A season indicates that it ever stops.
We start a new fall.
For 12 fucking years.
It's always autumn on Double Feature, brand new fall. Anyways, point is we start a new year of Double Feature on the Blade Runner Fargo episode. It's a nice clean point so that you can feel like you've listened to everything.
If you go back further through the Double Feature world,
impossible.
One thing you may be surprised by that I can only assume is going to come up on today's show. Don't go back beyond any shows trying to find the Nicolas Cage Wicker Man show that we're making jokes about. We've never done it. We probably won't do it for a while.
We can. We've got the Wicker Man on the show. We've already got
but
the movie.
It definitely is a film that has its own conversation that is completely independent from the masterpiece on today's show, which is the original 1973 Wicker Man. We're pairing that with a more modern movie about... children, cults, groups of bad hombres.
Bad hombres, get the fuck out of here.
It's a film called Eden Lake, which Eric has had a Rodney for the last 4 years. Can we do Eden Lake first? Is that okay with you?
We can and will.
Okay.
First, I must say, first before the first movie, pre-first, there will be spoilers.
Okay.
We're going to tell you what happens in Eden Lake. We're going to tell you about the Wicker Man. We're going to probably talk about endings. We're going to spoil plot points. If you haven't watched Eden Lake and the Wicker Man, look, I put Eden Lake on the show so you could watch it. That was the whole point, is I could go,
mm-hmm.
Oh, finally, time to watch this Eden Lake. That's the answer to your question, by the way. I'd never seen it.
That's the answer. That's going to be the answer to a major question next week also,
oh,
I assume.
Good. And the Wicker Man, you probably know what happened, but I'm going to say, if you didn't see this Nicolas Cage movie that penetrated the zeitgeist, this movie that everybody just, I don't know why everyone suddenly watched the Nicolas Cage Wicker Man at some point, I want just for a moment to mention this thing because of how remarkably different it is.
Yeah. I mean,
than
it's
the
a
Wicker
different
Man
thing.
On the show.
Yeah,
this is,
come on.
This is not one of those movies where you could say, well, I watched the remake. Maybe I can kind of follow what's going on in The Wicker Man. Because I will say when we get to that, it is remarkable how much you can take basically the same plot points and essentially the same, you make technically the same movie or about the same things and just how fucking different it is.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think if you're looking for some additional watching for this week, it might be worth it to watch the remake too, because if you were to lay one on top of the other, you're going to find all of my most interesting, fascinating things about
mm-hmm.
the fucking Wicker Man.
Sure.
Which is, why does this movie feel this way? It's so bizarre. Really incredible thing. Do we talk about the Patreon before we get into the meat of the movies here? The Patreon is... is nigh. The Patreon is the, we have a burning Patreon sitting behind us at our summer festival here. What I'm trying to say is we have a couple days left on this Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
You guys know the drill, right? Some people are new to the show. Maybe they don't know the drill. The drill is patreon.com/double feature.
You have to pledge blood to the Midsummer Patreon in order for us to continue beyond Midsummer.
Is that Midsummer or Midsommar?
I'm not going to specify.
Okay, good. That was good. I appreciate your Southern drawl on that one. That was nice. There, it's been invoked. Patreon.com/double feature. We can't do the show without it. It's more necessary.
Just chuck a couple bees in the basket.
More necessary than a blood harvest. I swear we're not doing the Nicolas Cage one today. We just got to get all the jokes out at the top of the show. We went 4 hours with each other just making bee jokes before we recorded, just so that we could get most of it out. And I feel like...
just made it worse.
I feel like our... don't make a bonnet joke. Okay. Look, this is, I want to do this in order of approachability too. So I also agree that Eden Lake's the way to go, because I think today is a, Eden Lake looks so surface and so approachable. And then kind of you start to dig in and there's some more. And then The Wicker Man looks pretty fucking hard and you start to watch it and it's even fucking harder.
Yeah.
And it is, it ends up being as a double feature, a little of what we talked about last episode, which is that sort of descent. It's a downward spiral in the 9 layers of analytical cinematic hell. So
welcome to double feature.
Join hands and let's begin.
I'm going to let you kick off Eden Lake, but I'm just kind of going to, so you hadn't seen this is the, that's the big secret.
I hadn't. No, we'd done the new, you know, The Woman in Black on our journey last year. This is the same director, and Eden Lake is, was a fantastically popular horror movie from its day in that era of contrasty, what, early 2000s or something like that?
Right, yeah.
The,
when horror was going straight to video at Best Buy, like that era.
Totally.
The
totally.
Dimension Extreme era of cinema, horror cinema.
So we had a movie that is doing an original thing. It was not part of the remake culture, I feel like. Since it came out, that element of it has been lost, because there have been a lot of great remakes or a lot of, great originals, even in just the last couple of years. So people forgot how much everything was fucking stale. And
right.
And people were desperately searching for an original film. And this little British movie comes out. And it is, sure, it's an original movie, but I'm actually interested in the part of it that we've seen before, which is this strange, I don't know what you want to call it, this sort of dickish kid teen hooligan thing.
It's a couple things, right? So it's sort of a flag in the sand that goes, this is firmly a genre.
Mm-hmm.
When this came out, it goes, this is a genre. You can go back in time and you can put all these in a box now together.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sort of like the movie that went, don't worry, I've seen all of you, I will be one of you.
Uh-huh.
The other thing that I think is super interesting about this movie, being, you know, of that hooligan kid horror genre, is that this isn't, for its ubiquity, like you mentioned, everyone had kind of seen it. It was sort of an affectionate addition to a lot of our horror collections in its day. A lot of those movies from the gore porn era, which this is from, they have stood the test of time in a few interesting ways. So I think of a movie like Hostel or even the Saw movies. They have aged in such a way where the gore porn has definitely become entrenched in the camp of the era. And people will go, oh yeah, good old lovable Saw movie.
No one says that yet but us. It's going to take another 20 years.
I think I've heard a lot of people giggle about the Saw franchise.
Really?
Yeah.
You know better people than I do.
But
everybody here goes, ah, gore porn. And I'm like, come because on guys, that's can for we get a past that reason. Phase?
Yeah. I think the thing that's amazing to me about rewatching Eden Lake for the first time since it came out, which is what I did for this show, is that it doesn't relent the same way that, you know, Hostel does. You can rewatch Cabin Fever and go, haha, Cabin Fever, what a fun jaunt.
Uh-huh.
You rewatch Eden Lake and you go, fuck, goddamn.
Yeah.
This isn't a fun movie. It's just not a fun movie.
Right, right. There is not a meta laugh to be had at what the genre is doing.
And so to go back to your kind of pointing at this hooligan kid movie, this is basically worst case scenario of hooligan kid movie.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of just, it goes, so imagine a group of children are terrorizing you, and that sucks because you have no power to stop them. And if you did, you're bad. You're a bad person.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you don't think, it, you know, just if you think anybody's on your side, they're not, because you're fighting children. It's sort of this literal representation of whether or not, you know, a 16-year-old should be tried as an adult. That's what we're watching unfold in Eden Lake.
This was such a, well, and you're right, in the most intense horror way possible. I think a lot of movies that were playing around in the subject matter, again, another reason that I love, look, the real reason I love the extreme years of the early 2000s is because that's when I came into horror. That's just the real answer,
sure,
as
yeah,
much as I want to make some other.
Yeah, right.
That's it. It's totally it. And that's a thing that I've been trying so much to explain to the people around me who treat me like I'm some sick weirdo as they clutch their pearls in a way that I thought was not real. So that's the actual reason. But, you know, I keep finding these excuses for why these movies, it was great that they existed. And we find yet another reason here, because we can see in horror and in other genres, the other movies that looked at the hooded teenager, the hooded British teenager. And I say, if you're going to talk about the fear of what these kids can do, then why not push it all the fucking way?
Mm-hmm.
So there was a moment, a kind of thing happening in the UK about 10 years ago. The one we did on this show that people don't have to go back to listen to, but a moment people might be familiar with, was the film Harry Brown.
Sure.
Which was Michael Caine.
Mm-hmm.
Which at the time we kind of just said, again, right in the throes of it, we were going, ah, Michael Caine doing a Dirty
Death
Harry.
Proof.
Or excuse yeah. me, a, well, maybe a little of that too. Michael Caine doing
Death Wish.
A Death Wish.
Yeah.
We're all doing different things here.
God.
Oh, it's Michael Caine doing a Death Wish.
Yeah.
But then we started to see more and more of these. And I also think when we saw Attack the Block, it was kind of a movie
reply.
That was,
yeah,
exactly, a reply to that. So I still don't know exactly what was going on there. The Sun wrote about Broken Britain and this whole moment that was happening of, it's really, really delicate to talk about, but of teenagers, of punks, of street punks, and how they were tearing Britain apart, and how it was, the reason it's kind of difficult to talk about is watching this movie, I'm questioning for the first time if Broken Britain is real or not. If all of these stories that were coming out about young hooligans with no moral compass and seemingly no logic or reason to their terror,
right,
were just hanging out in the street.
It's sort of like if what people were afraid Juggalos were actually existed but had British accents.
I'm a little worried that this might be, you know, the caravan invading the border, like a satanic panic of the 2000s
sure.
in Britain.
Sure.
And that later we're going to look back and be like, this was a bunch of manufactured stories.
Sure.
And then also, even as I say that, I hear Charles Crawford schooling me in an email, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's going to have some harsh opinions about a thing we don't know what we're talking about. So I'll just put that out there. There was a crop of this. There were some of these stories. You can look up the phrase Broken Britain and learn a lot more about this. And we don't really know. And I guess I do care. I want to say we don't know and we don't care. But I don't know. If you have an opinion on this, doublefeatureshow@icloud.com, I am kind of interested. So when all of these movies started coming out and talking about this, What becomes interesting to me is the way they represented these kids. We have a couple points now to create a line. And I felt like invoking all of those sort of hard questions, because the movie raises a lot of potential points. On the surface, you just kind of see what it's doing. It's showing this couple going on vacation, and it gets all fucked up by a horror element that's out in the woods, and that's it. But when you start to pick at it a little bit, it actually turns out to be a little more complicated. So you look at the element of these kids. Now, the kids are fucks, but I also kind of feel like, tell me your read on this, they're also a little bit of a joke. You know what I mean? They are, okay, so they're very scary, of course, and they're going to do bad things. But this movie, and I think Harry Brown as well, and probably some of these other movies, played them off like they're not serious. They don't stand for anything. They're just represented as this fucking soulless dirt. You see them on the beach just fucking around, listening to music. I think one of the kids' names is Hip Hop. You know, it's not a gag. It's not a joke. They're not, I mean to say that they are a joke, not in that they're funny, but that there's just something that you almost want to dismiss about them. Like, who the fuck are these kids?
Sure.
So if we could ask some of the hard questions around this, now that we've set up our characters, lovely couple on a honeymoon and some kids, I guess I want to know, what I think there is to chew on here is the what and where of the moral arguments. The where and what of what the movie's saying. So we didn't really talk about it with our two main characters, but we got Jenny and Steve hanging out, going on a little, I don't know what the fuck they're doing, vacation or whatever.
Proposal vacation. Come on, pay attention.
Romantic getaway, yes, with a proposal. Are they not supposed to be there? Because it feels to me like they are intruding, which is the first, beyond, you know, the kids kind of being treated as a bit of a joke, although deadly serious. When we look at the couple, maybe it's not so simple there either. I get the feeling that they are trespassing.
They absolutely, I mean, regardless, that feeling is supposed to permeate their existence in the film, because if it didn't feel like they were behind enemy lines, there would be a feeling of hope that the movie does not want you to ever have.
Yes.
The sheer fact that they have to go through so many literal fences in order to get to where this movie begins is a setup for you to know that these characters are not where they're supposed to be, and they're out of their element, and they are behind enemy lines, which means that they are at the mercy of the justice of the powers that be, and not their own set of moral compass.
So this is, you know, this is sort of looking at a movie and taking your own bit of, I mean, so many times we look at movies and go, what are they trying to say? And I think sometimes we can look at these movies and go, what could be said with this movie? What could this movie be used as an argument for? Because this is my real interest in talking about this movie today, is that it is such an ambiguous movie in terms of, I don't know that I could sit down and tell you what it's intentionally doing, but it makes my mind race all over the place with this moral ambiguity of these different factions. So yeah, it is possible that we're just using a horror element here. We're taking people and putting them out of their comfort zone, putting them out of where they belong, putting them across enemy bounds, enemy lines, I guess, so that they have nowhere to run, so that the only place they can retreat to is still off in the cannibal woods or the fucking wherever. You know, part of this movie is Straw Dogs, and part of this movie is Deliverance. And so I think in the same way that Deliverance very intentionally played with those themes, you could make a lot of the same arguments for the themes of Deliverance that you could, honestly, with Eden Lake. You could talk about that element of trespassing or of coming into somebody else's community and then acting like the victims.
Right.
Because you've put yourself there. And so you start asking some complicated questions there, just in a really abstract sense of, all right, what happens to them is terrible. It's awful. And you don't want to blame victims. There is a single decision made early on. If we truly say, okay, these people are trespassing and not supposed to be there, they made a wrong choice. And now they are victims because they overstepped their own boundaries. So we start being in this gray area there.
Well, and then I think that is, you get put in an even more confounding, complex situation by having her be literally along for the ride while mm-hmm. he puts her in a compromising place.
Yeah.
And then he just goes and fucking dies. And then now she's the one paying for she's complicit in the trespassing. I don't think that's an argument, but it's definitely, she didn't set out that day to go into these people's backyards and set up camp.
Well, it's all,
but she's there now.
Sure.
And he's dead. The guy who made the call is murdered to death. And now she's there going, well, fuck, not only am I not where I'm supposed to be, but y'all murdered to death my fiance. Uh-huh. So now I'm in a really compromising situation because on one hand, there's a certain level of justice that comes from seeking revenge here, mm-hmm. or at least seeking justice here.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm not where I'm supposed to be. And that puts me on the defensive, even though I've been wronged.
Well, it's the way this ramps up. It's the way these small aggressions get out of control.
Microaggressions?
It's beyond microaggressions. It's, you know, killing animals and when accidents are looked at with intention. So the whole movie starts to play around in a lot of these gray areas. It's funny that you blame Steve because I came on here thinking about this other thing that may be in this movie and may not. Where I think, curious on your opinion on this too, if Jenny is wanting Steve to kind of man up, and if that doesn't escalate the conflict.
That's super weird. Yeah, no, it definitely does. It definitely does.
There's sort of
this
level of, hey, honey, we're supposed to be having a romantic day on the beach, and those kids have their music up loud. What are you, chicken? You don't want to go over there.
Right.
There's like a weird machismo thing that I think she
definitely
might be playing into.
No, it's definitely, that is definitely there. And I think that is also problematic. And it's funny
because
she's
not asking for him to die.
Sure.
And she shouldn't be faulted for killing him just for pushing him. But again,
right.
Moral gray area.
Yeah. No, this whole movie operates in an interesting place. And then you get to the final blows of this. You know, the adults, right? You finally get to adults.
Yeah,
oh my
yeah.
God. Thank God we finally got to adults. Although you did kill one of their children.
Uh-huh.
And now they're ready to fucking slaughter you. And everyone needs to calm down.
See?
But we as the audience, part of us is going, listen, you crazy adults who live in this gated community.
Uh-huh.
We were with her the whole time. And there's a lot you're not understanding. But me, as an empathetic individual, goes, all they see is a dirty lady who killed one of their children. And it's funny because the moral gray area resonates from the whole movie. You can make a list of all the things people do wrong, but you cannot say that none of them are justified.
Yeah, right.
Which is fucking weird.
Well, the other thing about the parents is that the interaction between the kids and the parents, you know, we're seeing, we kind of ask this question about, is it class that this movie's pointing at? Is that a piece of it? Or are we watching the strangers? Is it about chaos? And there's no rhyme or reason. The kids are machines that are just going to do bad. But the one bit of sort of logic or reason, I guess, we're getting is, as we're desperately searching for the why and the background and the who is to blame, is the movie showing us that these parents are pretty terrible to their kids.
Sure.
And I can't help but feel like, especially in the vacuum this movie presents, where it's just not giving any, I use the word joke to describe the lack of rationality of what motivates these kids.
Right.
So we're searching for those answers. The movie has to know we're out there looking for the answers. And then it shows us, you know, a guy smacking his son, or parents, you know, beating up their kids or scolding their kids. It has this tiny little bit of a thread that is broken children coming from broken homes. Not enough.
In a broken England.
Not right. In broken Britain. Yeah, totally. 100%. And again, just enough to stir the fucking pot. And the movie never loses sight of what it's actually there to do. You know, the kids are scary. The scene where they're passing around the razor at the campfire is fucking scary. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's ever scarier than when she gets back covered in mud. I love the design of the character. That's such an icon from this movie. Just covered in this kind of black blood mud thing out there in the wilderness. Comes back into the broken home and hides in the bathroom and finds this razor. And then everybody's onto her. And all at once, they start pounding on the door. And it's just such a scary moment. And really, you don't know what comes of that. The movie always operates, you know, the volume's at 100 for those scenes all the fucking time. And you're left with all of these other things underneath where you're so rattled by the terror, it's hard to even get at, oh God, what was that all even over? Descent into chaos, descent into the Wicker Man.
Had you seen this one before?
I'm only familiar with the goddamn bees.
Okay.
And I will say that the thing that I was saying is such a remarkable difference is that I did not realize how much, I don't know, folk was going into this, the aesthetic, the design, the feeling of this movie.
Yeah. This movie, it's amazing. I watched this for one of my 31 Days of Horror. You know, when you watch the movies you haven't seen before, it's a really good excuse to do that.
The classics that everyone has seen that are important that I'm sorry.
Exactly.
We're getting to all of them.
So I went.
We opened with Blade Runner. What do you want from me? Sorry, go ahead.
I went back and watched this and I mentioned it. I think last week at the end of the show, maybe not. That was kind of a blur last week at the end of the show. I was big man Japan'd out, but this movie reminded me of the same feeling I had watching The Stepford Wives.
Yeah.
Which is where, I mean, to put completely vaguely, it's a reaction where I go, oh, it's that reaction. It's when I go, okay, I see what this movie's doing. Or okay, I'm familiar generally with The Wicker Man. And then I watch the movie and I go, oh shit, but this is like a fucking masterpiece of a movie.
That's what I was talking about when I said The Wicker Man's going to be as hard as Eden Lake drowns us down into.
Yeah.
Wicker Man is going to start there and just get even fucking worse.
Because it you know, coming out the gate, you know, even though I had watched this and, you know, this isn't my first Wicker rodeo. I had seen the bees first.
Uh-huh.
So to come into this, you know, it's like you were saying at the beginning of the show where I go, I get the basic idea. It's just like, you know, on film instead of digital.
Yeah.
Then you watch it and you go, this is a whole different thing. It's doing a whole different thing. This is way scarier. I mean, the direness of the final throws of this movie, just the apocalyptic mood that is going into the end of this film, it is unmatched by many things I've seen. It's just disgusting and hot.
I feel like we could do this whole show on the mood. I mean, that's honestly the thing that possesses me so much.
It's gripping. Watching the movie just owns you. It owns you. It tells you where you're going to go, and it puts you inside the fucking statue, and it sets you on fucking fire.
It is a total nightmare. And everything about it to me, I don't like being here. Every mm-hmm. single thing is alien. It is, and this probably wasn't totally the case when it came out, but time has served this movie so well because now it's like one of those movies you watched. I got this feeling a lot more as a kid. You'd be flipping through channels or something and you'd see a movie and go, oh, that's from an era way before me. This is, I don't relate or understand these people. Mm-hmm. They don't dress like the people I see now. You don't understand anything about it. And as you get a better understanding of history and eras and what people used to look like and you see more of it, that's not as tough for you to watch, I don't think. And I'm speaking in the second person again. I mean, this might as well be something that only applies to my life and nobody else. So I don't know if you have this experience.
I mean, I do. I think sort of to go back to what you're saying about how this movie succeeds despite its being 50 years old. 60 years old?
73.
So I guess, yeah, 50. So it's crazy because of the fact that this movie is predicated on the isolationistic, the isolation of the island, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So
it should feel alien. I mean, yeah, it works.
That's the thing,
the
is
movie.
Everything's fucking weird. And you can watch this movie in 2019. And he goes to this island and you're like, this might take place now for all I know. And these people are just stuck in 1973,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you watch this movie. If you were to watch this movie, if it were made today, these people could be acting exactly the same way.
Yeah, I didn't anticipate the feeling I'd have, but you're right. There is nothing like The Wicker Man in horror. The closest to this movie has to be things that aren't in horror, that are the furthest from horror. When we did a movie like Picnic at Hanging Rock,
mm-hmm.
that it was sort of, oh, this is from, I don't know, 1901 or whatever the fuck that movie was from. And we sort of went, yeah, I mean, horror movie, you know, horror people talk about this movie, but really, what the fuck is Picnic at Hanging Rock? I see this sort of aesthetic a lot more in exploitation. You know, to me, it looks more like Beyond the Valley of the Dolls or something like mm-hmm. that, that kind of era of movie. It's not what horror movies looked like at the time or what horror movies ever fucking looked like or what the remake looked like. And because of that, it's alienating to me from the era as a modern viewer. It's alienating to me because that's what the movie's about. It's alienating to me as a person who loves, watches, and studies horror films.
Mm-hmm.
Every single bit of it is not things that I'm used to. There's nothing to grip onto. And so I feel it's not even trapped. I feel under the spell of this movie. I feel like it's doing something that is, it feels dangerous to even be around, you know, to watch.
Yeah.
That it has you, you're right, it tells you where to go and it traps you and it pushes you out there. And suddenly you're going, God, I guess I'm doing whatever this movie tells me to do. And I don't want to do any of it. So when it takes you certain places, I mean, it's also hard because, again, as somebody who loves horror movies, seeing something like this that's unexpected is becoming more and more a rare treat the more movies you see.
Right.
And so I love it and hate it, you know? The part of me that it wants to hate it does because it's effective. So when I'm in an area and I shouldn't trust it, I don't. When I'm in the area that should keep my guard up, it is. And then there are just these fucking moments of the music especially that put me in another time and place where I feel no relation to the community or the people or the movement.
Mm-hmm.
Folk is so fucking alienating to me.
Mm-hmm.
The bizarre naked sequence of Willow's song, the song that the fucking sneaker pimps cover, right?
Right.
It's a short film. I mean, just wow. That it is voiced by a character, the way they play it, and that there are these sort of, I want to call them tribal kind of beats to it, of her banging on the wall, banging on the door, and then just moving into these full body dances where it seems like she should be uncomfortable. The thing, especially about the way nudity plays today, is that you're being coy and you're hiding things and you're being careful. And the last thing you want is somebody jerking in rhythm in a way that seems like they're just going to spin around and you have no control over where they're going or what they're doing. And so even from that weird kind of meta level, it's scary to me because I just don't know where the scene is going or what's going to happen. And it plays out for the whole song. There's a whole, it's like when we watched that movie that had the entire Frankie Goes to Hollywood music video in it.
Yeah.
What was that?
What was it?
Like Body Double or something was that?
It was Body Double.
Body Double, that was it. Yeah, right. Yeah, so you just get this whole piece in there. I feel like we should talk about the ending too. I mean, I don't know that we're landing on much of anything here. Mm-hmm. It's just spinning around and getting, trying to get your bearings over and over. And that is the magic of it. When we arrive at this ending, which you felt the need to talk about right away, so I know that this is a mm-hmm. huge part of it for mm-hmm. you. Of course, the ending of The Wicker Man is a huge, you know, that's, everybody yeah. fucking taught. It's the ending of Invasion of the Body Snatchers remake. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's everything. So I think this is a cautionary tale of religion, you know, of superstition, of a lack of critical thinking.
Sure.
The best part of this to me is that at the ending, he lays this all out. He gives this rah-rah speech, this championing, you know, everything that's wrong with your society and the sheer power of this logical argument is going to destroy all the superstition. It's going to break the spell that is cast over these people and will save his life. And as a pessimist to me, the best part is that he lays it out and no one is convinced.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody gives a fuck. And really, isn't that the real lesson?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's more nihilism. Maybe this is me being a nihilist. But, you know, you and I have, we went from doing a show that was very skeptical to a show that just didn't even fucking talk about it. And we got old and we didn't bring it up anymore. And we're just worn out. And I don't know about you, man, but I feel like, you know what? People don't learn. The fight is hopeless. Fuck it. That's just the mood I've been in. That's battle-hardened me years after the tragedy of the U.S. election. And I look at The Wicker Man and go, this movie gets me.
Totally.
You're going to stand up. You're going to give the speech. You're going to be like, look, guys, this is the effect being used. It's all cold reading. You can buy books on it. And everyone's going to be like, well, you can talk to the dead using these books? No, guys, not what I'm saying at all. And they're like, okay, we'll hop in this basket.
Well, what's my horoscope say about it?
The reveal of the Wicker Man itself, of this statue, is so fucking intense. And it just goes on and is honestly so uncomfortable.
Endless. It is endless.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, it's fucking endless. It's like that, you know, we're talking about how this movie knows it owns you.
Yeah.
And it gets to that point and it goes, I know what you want. You want me to be like, boo, creepy. And then credits. But I'm not going to do that. I'm going to hold your eyes open like fucking Clockwork Orange. Uh-huh. You're going to sit here while this whole thing goes down. And surprise, it's exactly what you think it is.
Yeah.
There's no twist.
There's just a slow burning of a human alive.
Yeah. He's not going to get out. Don't expect him to get out. How could he possibly get out? You're smarter than that.
We lost,
pretty guys.
Pretty brutal. Welcome to my favorite French extreme film, The Wicker Man.
And no one is coming to help him either because he shouldn't have been there in the first goddamn place.
You know what I find is especially just like kudos to The Wicker Man, icing on the cake, is they light this thing on fire. You're waiting for some sort of let's do something. And I remember watching the remake and having that same feeling, but of course not like this. And as it goes on and no help is coming and no one will save the day and he's not getting out of it. And God, are we just going to watch this guy burn alive? There's this fucking goat inside that is not living deliciously.
Mm-mm.
That is just being burned alive. So you hear screaming animals that are being sacrificed to this harvest, which just makes it even worse. It's just this little twisting of the knife where the movie's already got you. You're already under the movie's fucking spell. You're already at the end of the movie. You already can't believe this is happening. And then it's like, listen to the sound of animals burning alive. That's going to be our dude in a second. Anyways, thanks for watching The Wicker Man. And, you know, in the end, you can criticize the crazy pagans all you want, but I love the way that the film cuts between the pagans outside and their song, and then back to the Wicker Man and Howie singing his little Christian song.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's this whole thread of Christianity throughout the movie, and he is not the savior of the people, nor is Christianity the savior of his life.
Mm-hmm.
The mere power of Christ does not compel anyone in this movie. And the movie fucking knows it. I feel like the movie has to know it because of the way it cuts back and forth from them outside. You look at them, your point of view is supposed to be Howie. That's what you think your point of view is. You're watching through Howie's eyes and going, wow, these pagans singing their weird Satan-y, whatever right, the fuck is going on.
Killing him's not
going to
bring back
there.
Your goddamn honey.
And then I feel like you switch points of view.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're watching closely, I feel like him singing his own Christian,
his own pagan song.
That's what it is, yeah. Right? It's just two people shouting religious nonsense at each other at the end of the movie, and one of them is burning alive.
Right.
And it's not the pagans. It's pretty brutal. Lessons were learned. We eradicated a religion after this movie, and now double feature .fm, I guess. I don't know. The spell is broken. The movie's over. The spell is broken. It's fine. We're all fine here. Whew. We made it. We made it through The Wicker Man.
Mm.
We're here to climb out of the nine layers of hell, maybe back up to like the third rung with some movies next week.
Oh, yeah.
I want to thank the executive producers of the show. That is Ben Ecker, Charles Crawford, the Abbot of Unreason, Tom Leonard, Brett Hayton, Bruno Hunziker, Billy Wilson, Aaron Shore, and John. Thanks, guys, for bringing us to The Wicker Man and out of fucking Eden Lake. And now, you too, by the way, can become a Patreon. That's patreon.com/double feature. Just because it's the last show of the month here, it's just a good, it's always the last show of the month somewhere, though. So if you're listening to this later, check out that Patreon. You can see how much we're burning alive, and chuck your $2 in the bin there.
Two movies we're doing next week that you can stop programming like just by logging on to patreon.com/double feature. We're going to do I feel like we've done this before, but I can't think of exactly what two movies it would have been together.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go ahead and say that this is Double Feature's first somehow on the 12th year Dan O'Bannon double feature.
Maybe together. Maybe two great Bannons that Bannon great together.
Yeah, that's true. A band O'Bannons.
Last time we did a Bannon on the show was not good. That's because it was not Dan O'Bannon. You remember that?
I do.
Yeah.
But one nobody else has to just because it happened before Blade Runner.
One reference for all Double Feature listeners.
Next time on Double Feature, we're going to do the old Tobe Hooper flick, Invaders from Mars. It's a real good time, and strap in, because when you think you're having a good time, you're not having a good time yet. That's what I'm going to say about that movie.
Great.
And then we're going to pair that with My Fault next week. It's called Heavy Metal, and it's a movie that, from what I understand, has boobs. But Eric tells me otherwise.
No, there's some boobs in Heavy Metal. You'll get some weird, smutty... Look, it is what you want.
It's an animated sword and sorcery anthology, I think, that Dan O'Bannon had more to do with than I expected. We're not doing the 2000. We're doing the OG. We're not doing Love, Death, and Robots. We're doing Heavy Metal from the 80s, the real original one, and we're sticking that next to Tobe Hooper's Invaders from Mars. If you have a problem, you can fuck right off.
Smut Reigns, Live Deliciously.
How to Get Burned, Watch More Fucking Film.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the battleship Pretension Fleet.